get started. Tonight I'm going to read out of the Amplified Bible. It's a New Testament. It was written about 1954. The reason being is we're getting to a very important passage of John, and I think this particular version is excellent for one of the points I'd like to get across tonight. It's very close to the Greek. The American Standard Version is the best one for Greek. But what the Amplified does is take the Greek and draw it out and put it in language that one can understand. So as we read some of these passages, I think you'll be able to see why I chose this particular version tonight. So last week we started in on... we're going to start with 35, but let's go back up to 31, 32, 33, and 34. Remember, Jesus is talking to the congregation that had followed him from where he had fed them, the 5,000 plus women and children. And some of them had waited all night, and then they followed him the next day. They started questioning him. And then we ended off last Friday night where he talks about that it, manna in heaven, you said it came from Moses, but however, that came from God. And then he says, I am able to give you manna. I am able to give you bread. And what, remember what their thinking was. And that's where we left off. What was their... Because they said, well, give us this bread. Give us this bread of life. We want it. What was their thinking? Yeah, they were looking at it just strictly materialistically. Man, if you can give bread just like God did in the wilderness and we'll never go hungry, well, we want this bread. We want all of it that you can give us. So verse 35 begins in chapter 6 then, and John is laying a groundwork. Remember, he's telling this story about 60 years after the death of Christ, so he's picking out the most important parts. Now he begins a series of I Am. So I'd like for each one of you to take your Bible and chapter 6 we'll stay in. Somebody look up John 8:12. Peggy, you do that. John 8:12. Nathan, look up, if you would... all these are John, chapter 10, verse 7 and 9. Selma, you look up chapter 10, 11 and 14. Sandy, if you'd look up chapter 11, verse 25. Leroy, if you'd look at John 14, 6. John, if you would look at 15, 1 and 5. Yes. Well, let's see what we... Sometimes my so-called memory doesn't work. Yeah, 8:12?
I have 8:12.
Yeah. Okay, well, pick up 8:12 then. Okay, it's nice to know that I'm not completely an idiot. Okay, these are who Jesus says who he is. Okay, first one, I'll do chapter 6. Listen to what in verse 35, I am the bread of life. Okay, 8:12. Okay, the next one. Whoever has another one.
So he explained it to them. I'm the gate for the sheep. He said, all others who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who
okay.
Come by the way of the gate.
So he says, I am the bread of life. I am the light. I am the gate. The next one.
Go
ahead.
I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. That's verse 1.
Okay.
Verse 5, I am the vine, ye are the branches.
I am the vine. Next one.
I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep.
Okay.
He who is a hireling and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, beholds the wolf come and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hireling and not concerned about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own knows me.
Okay, so he's the light, gatekeeper, bread, shepherd, gate. Next one.
I am the resurrection and the life.
Okay. Resurrection and the life. And the last one, Leroy?
Well, my favorite one. Jesus replied, I am the way, I am the truth, I am life, and no one comes to the Father except by me. And if you knew me, you would know my Father too.
Okay. See, this is why theologians love the book of John.
What verse was it?
Pardon me?
What verse?
The last one?
Yes.
Which one did you have, Leroy?
14:6,
I think.
14:6, yeah.
14:6.
Yeah.
Oh, 14:6. 14:6. Yeah. So, as John looked back over all the things he could have written, this is becoming what's important to him. Remember, there's only one miracle that he really did was the feeding of the 5,000. He had some healings, but that was the only miracle. He is interested in who Jesus said and told in his ministry who he is. So very important. So now, he wants to get, and let's start with verse 35. He says to them, well, give us this bread. Give us this bread. We want this bread. Now Jesus is getting down to business. I want you to listen to the Amplified because I think it's good versions. Jesus replied, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never be hungry, and he who believes on and cleaves to and trusts in and relies on me will never thirst any more at any time. Now, do you see why I picked the Amplified? Is there any doubt of what he is saying to these people? Give us this bread, they said. And he says to them, we're not talking about loaves of bread. We're not talking about manna. I am the bread of life. If you'll come to me, you will never be hungry, and he who believes on, cleaves to, trusts in, relies on me will never thirst anymore at any time. Now, in your relationship with your Father, can you see what a mighty promise this is in the language that he spoke to these people and it was written down to? The word relationship, we throw it around a lot, but can you see what a true relationship with God is? You trust Him, you cling to Him, you rely on Him. You put everything into it. Now, let's look at what he was saying. What's the two biggest things that really physically keep you have to have to live?
Food and water.
Food and water. They are essentials. So here he's saying to them, I am the bread of life. I am the one that will keep you from ever thirsting at any time. And this is the promise that we have that God will always take care of us. Just like John said, and I appreciate that. He prayed, asked us to pray, he got an answer. Well, you have to trust that answer. And so this is what Jesus is saying. Then he continues in verse 36. But as I told you, although you have seen me, still, you do not believe and trust and have faith. So in these two verses, what is he saying to this crowd, really? Let's put it in today's English. What is he saying?
They have seemed to believe, but they didn't.
Yeah. He's saying, you really don't understand what we're talking about. Why? Because what was their concern?
Their concern is physical.
Yeah. What's in it for me? See? And sometimes if we're not careful, that's what we do with God. I want this, I want that, I want this. What's in it for me? And so here Jesus is patiently laboring with them. And he says in verse 36, although you've seen me, you do not know who I am. You have no trust. You have no faith. Verse 37, now he's getting down to the parts that are going to make the Jews absolutely despise him and want to kill him. Verse 37, all whom my Father has given and entrusted to me will come to me. And he who comes to me, I most certainly will not cast out. Now, what does your version say? Somebody read, a couple of you read verse 37. I want to show you the difference with the Amplified.
All that the Father gives to me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never drive away.
Okay, that's a good one. I like that one. All right, another one, another version.
But some will come to me, those the Father has given me, and I will never, never reject them.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to read the Amplified. Because remember, it's taking the Greek and stretching it out to make it dramatic. But yet, absolutely correct to the Greek. All whom my Father has entrusted to me will come to me, and him who comes to me, I will most certainly not cast out. I will never, no, never reject one of those who comes to me. Do you see the difference?
What they're doing is taking almost the literal words of Greek.
Yes.
And putting them into
yes.
Things.
Yeah. They're putting the
Greek word has so many yeah. different meanings. Yeah, it puts it all in one place.
They're putting the emphatic of way he said it and what he meant. I will never, no, never, never reject one of those who come to me.
I have one question.
Yes.
What does it mean, those that the Father has given to me?
Okay. Who do you think he has given to Jesus?
Well,
that's a good question.
Everyone.
Huh?
I thought everyone could come to Jesus.
Absolutely. And he's going to...
And my Bible says, all that which the Father has given me.
Okay.
And then it goes on to say, in him that cometh to me, I will not in no wise cast
yeah.
out. But
yeah.
when it says, all that the Father giveth me, it doesn't mean like all of him that he's given me. It's all that.
All that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what does that mean, though? All that the Father has given me.
Okay, that's a good question. What do you think it means?
I think it means we have to respond.
Okay, we have to...
At some time in our point, everything, everybody will come to God. He will never cast them out.
Okay. What do you mean by that exactly?
I think at some point in everyone's life, they come to God,
Okay.
Because they want to try it.
Okay.
There's no... What do you have to lose when you pray, there's some point everyone's going to first come to Him.
Okay. Let me see what verse we're going to get to that, because you are you're very close to being absolutely correct. Let's hold that thought as we go down the list, okay? Okay, because we want to come back to it. Verse 38. For I have come down from heaven. Now, do you understand the implication of that statement right there?
Imagine the Jews as King of Bars.
The hair rising.
See, there's a difference from him saying, I could be the Messiah, I might be the Messiah. Look and see. Can't you see what I've done? Boy, this statement. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will and purpose, but to do the will and purpose of Him who sent me. And let's go to 39. And this is the will of Him who sent me, that I should not lose any of all that He has given me, but that I should give new life and raise all up at the last day. For this is my Father's will and His purpose, that everyone who sees the Son and believes and cleaves to and trusts and relies on Him should have eternal life, and I will raise him up from the dead at the last day. Now, first of all, Jesus came for what particular reason?
To tell people about the character of the Father, because he'd been misunderstood.
Okay. And what is the will and the character of that Father?
Number one is love.
Love? What else?
Life.
Life, absolutely.
The dog should be saved.
That's right. What is Jesus saying here? Who does he want to be saved? Who does he want for to go and spend eternity?
Everyone.
The Pharisees?
Yeah, he wants all of them.
Samaritan dog at the well?
Yeah.
Did the Pharisees like that concept?
No.
See? Have to. Whenever you read, you got to look at the context. Who is he talking about? Pharisees didn't believe this. They wasn't interested in the Samaritans going to heaven. Not at all.
Do we have people that we're not interested in going to heaven?
We have people we give up on very quickly.
I think they give up on.
People who hate us, we don't
want to see them. Well, you know, we laugh, but read some of the things that when we were going through the Bible, 66 books, when we come across the stories of David, boy, David was no namby-pamby on some of those Psalms. Lord, take my enemies and crush them. Kill them. Why are you allowing them to be alive? See? Why did God permit that? That's the way he felt.
Well, maybe God feels that he has a chance to save them.
Certainly.
This is why we have to leave vengeance up to God.
Certainly. Who are we? What have you done in your life that you're ashamed of? See, we've all been in that shoes. We've all been there. We've all been in rebellion. We've all thought what we wanted to do was better than what we were doing. The goodness of God says, I will never, never even think about rejecting you if you'll just come. And this is my Father's will. I'm here to do the will of my Father. Now, somebody look up a passage that was very dear to the Jews. And Jesus is certainly referring to that. I think it's Jeremiah 31:3. And Justin, this is going to help answer your question.
35:3?
I think 31:3 would be better.
About the one in Matthew that says, but many are invited, but few are chosen.
Who does the choosing?
First.
Okay, let's go to Jeremiah 31:3. Then we'll come back to the one in Matthew.
Okay.
that I have dearly loved you from old, and still I maintain my unfailing care for you. I will build you up again, O Virgin Israel, and you shall be rebuilt. That it.
Is that Jeremiah 31:3?
Jeremiah 31:3.
I have loved you with an
everlasting. Yeah, that's the one I'm looking.
People that survive the sword.
No, is that 3?
Yeah.
Okay, 31:3. You're.
Mine 3 is not even with the word. That's the letters. You know,
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Read where it starts.
Read yours. I'm sure it's 31:3. Please be 31:3. Okay, Salma, read it.
Okay, the Lord appeared to him from afar, saying, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have drawn you with loving kindness.
Yes, that's the one I'm looking for. This is God's promise in the Old Testament. I have loved you with an everlasting love, and I have drawn you to me with what? Loving kindness. And when Jesus is talking to the Jews, they were familiar with that text, and this is what he's talking about. I have come to do the will of my Father. What is that will? To draw you with loving kindness. Now let's go to Justin's question. Do you think that in people's lives that they come to a crossroad where they know about God, make a decision one way or the other about God?
Are you saying everyone? In the world? No.
Gotta know.
I think that the children who were raised under the Soviets and like that, they were never given an opportunity to understand anything about God.
I know everyone comes to the crossroad before they're going to pray. Okay. That's probably real early, too, when we start to pray. But if you pray and you don't know God, what are you talking to?
Okay.
Let's say a choice comes to your life. I don't know if you understand what that choice is, but maybe unintentionally make that decision.
Okay. What's the judgment going to be on then?
How have you treated your fellow man?
Yeah. And I think that some people, even if they've never heard of Christ, would do that.
Now, is there anybody going to be in heaven that hadn't heard of Christ?
Yes.
Who said yes?
I did.
Well, that's a pretty strong yes. Kind of shocks me. He could be wrong with that yes. So let's find out if he's wrong with that yes or not. Why do you say that?
There's just between the start of humankind and the world, there's bound to be at least one person who has never heard that name, but has heard the call that God has given them. They might not understand that.
Man, you're confusing me. How can you hear the call of God and you don't even know His name?
We're all born with something in us that reaches up to something greater than us.
You say, how can that
happen? That's God.
Yeah. How can all the people that actually saw Jesus not actually believe? I mean, there's people that know God, just don't know His name.
Seem crazy, doesn't it?
They don't know His name. They've never seen Him physically, but they know God.
Okay. Well, who would like to straighten this mess up?
Well, let me add to the mess. Ellen White says that there are people who will be as good as they were.
Pardon? Yes.
Yeah.
Let's look at God's intention. Because we have two choices here. Is God trying to get everyone He can into the kingdom? Or is He trying to keep everyone He can out of the kingdom? Are you sure? Is that what we, as Christians, teach?
This is what I read to you. Many are invited, but few are chosen.
Okay.
Is that translation incorrect?
Well, let's look at it. Which one is it? Matthew what?
Matthew 22:14.
22:14. We can always wander a little bit. I'm usually a pretty stickler on staying right on course. 22:14. For many are called, invited, and summoned, but few are chosen. Okay?
Maybe they could have messed it up in the translation and it was, but few choose.
Oh, there's always somebody in the class that knows a little bit. Who is invited to spend eternity with God?
We all are.
Every single person that has ever been alive. And I know what you're referring to, so let's set that aside. In the kingdom, Ellen White paints a very beautiful picture. Rob's used it and I use it because it's a beautiful picture. She paints the picture that there's going to be a large congregation. Don't know what large is in heaven. Have no earthly idea. But there's going to be a ton of people that Jesus is going to come and say, you're probably wondering, what are you doing here? And you're probably wondering who I am. My name is Jesus. And she says, around the tree of life, that Jesus will sit down and give them a discourse, starting in heaven, all the way through. That's all right, just a scorpion. Yeah. That he's going to take him from all the way through, from heaven when sin entered, all the way through world's history, and tell him about the cross. Now, you stop and think, that's a very beautiful picture. The question, is God trying to get everyone there he can? Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt. The truth is, we have to reject God to keep us from being there. He has placed within our life a yearning. And if that yearning was to follow its natural course, we would be drawn and attracted to God. Sometimes that's through nature. Sometimes that's through examples of other people. Sometimes that's through the kindness of people. Sometimes it's through the Word. Sometimes it's through witnessing. Sometimes it's through God Himself working. But there is something that draws us to Him. We have to reject that. And that's the promise that God has given us. For those that we've had the privilege of studying a lot, one of the greatest truths to me that I came across was the panoramic view. The final proof that everybody that is in heaven that wants to be there is after the panoramic view is shown, the wicked see where they rejected God, but yet they see His justice and mercy. They bow down. They admit that He is God, that He is just, and then what's their next act?
Attack.
Let's go up there, take that city, and kill them. It doesn't affect one person. And that's the goodness of God. He says in the Old Testament, many, many times, when I do the Elohim in our seminars, I read about 10 texts and they finally get the idea. What is God's covenant? God's covenant has always been the same covenant from the beginning to the end. All I want to do is to be your God and you be my people. Now we've taken that and we've fancied it up with old covenant, new covenant, blood, blah, all that. It's been the covenant all the way through. Just wants to be your God and you be His people. So He draws all. Jews didn't like that. Why would they like it? Because they were chosen. They were pious. They were saints. You were a dog. And so here Jesus is saying, I am the bread of life. If you really hunger and you really thirst, you will never again, if you'll cleave to me, be hungry or be thirsty, and I'll raise you in the resurrection. Because I have been sent from heaven to come and do my Father's will, which is to glorify Him. Later on in John, we're going to read a very, very passage that says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And I don't have to pray the Father for you, because God already loves you. So this is why these passages become big. Any comments or questions or, you know, does this help answer your question? Mm-hmm. To answer yours, we're all invited. We just choose not to go.
No, not to jump ahead, but I think the Greek in on verse 60 there, or the word that they use, it says this is hard for us to understand.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to accept. Well, Strong brings out there another phrase in there that says, these words do not move me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you think the tense is incorrect in the verse? Because it said you are chosen. When you think of being chosen, that seems like that's the wrong word then.
Yeah, I think in the context is that he was talking to the Pharisees here, and he was just relaying back to them their thinking.
Yeah, you can still use that word like that, because
he
will choose everybody, but you could not be chosen, but you're just not
because of God. See, one of the things that we must understand, that I would like for us to understand, is God will honor your choice.
That's the problem with a lot of people.
See, he's not going to. He's not going to drag you into heaven kicking and screaming.
They just want somebody to say, this is what you do. And
for years I had trouble with the word covenant until I realized it's a deal. Let's make a deal.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying the covenant's always been the same. I take in the deal, I go from Genesis right through Isaiah, Jeremiah. It's over and over and over. I want to be your God and you be my people. It's relationship. That's His covenant. Let's have a relationship. And if you have that relationship, see, that's why I like the Amplified. The Amplified, go back to 35. I think it's excellent. Anybody who believes, cleaves, trusts, relies on me will never be thirsty anymore at any time. That's a relationship. Any other comments?
I had a question.
Yes.
I was looking for this as we're talking about it, and I might have to get back next week. A verse in Zechariah where it talks about a vision that he had seen, and the question was asked, what are those scars on your hands and then the scar on your side? And I am loosely paraphrasing that, so I'm not sure. I just want to ask, maybe anyone could direct me to that. Might have to get back next week. It's in a book that I've been reading. But just to go along with what we were talking about, when Ellen White depicts that picture,
mm-hmm.
Who are you, and what's, why are you talking to me?
Yeah. We would love to take that as a prophetic statement, but you must read it in context.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes, must read it in context. I mean, it would be a beautiful story if that fit.
Okay.
Must read it in context.
Do you know what that is in Zechariah, though, somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well,
we would like to say, well, this is talking, but you've got to read it in context. It does not, sit there. Yeah. Wished it did. All right, let's go to 41. Now, is Jesus being pretty plain here? Is he quoting back scripture, what they're looking at, things that have been from the Old Testament? Now, here's what it does to the Jews. Now, the Jews murmured and found fault and grumbled about Jesus because he said, I am myself the bread which comes down from heaven. They kept asking, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How then can he say, I've come down from heaven? So what did they get out of this discourse?
That he was a fraud.
Yeah. Why? How did they know he was a fraud?
Well, they knew his mother and father.
Well, they knew his mother and father.
But it was all this was prophesied to them, though.
Yes. So what does it say? Is it Jesus' fault? Or is it their fault? No.
They were waiting for a Messiah to come.
See?
They just never recognized him as being what they were waiting for.
Absolutely. Preconceived ideas are a killer. Are we ever guilty of that?
Yeah.
Every day. I don't know where. Every day from small scale to large scale.
Right. See? Jesus was pleading. He was using tender words. He was drawing upon Jeremiah, upon Isaiah. I am the bread of life. He was drawing from Moses. I am. If you'll do this, this. What were they looking at? They were looking at the external. That's all they said. Now, I came across a story today. For those who are going to be in Sabbath school tomorrow, it's going to be normally I say I don't even know what I want to talk about half the time. Half the time I tell you I don't even know if it's worth showing up for. But I guarantee you tomorrow's going to be a wild ride because it's going to be a fascinating discussion. And I'm going to tell two stories, and then I'm going to ask for advice. Now, I normally don't ask for a whole lot of advice, but I'm going to ask for advice, and the Sabbath school class is going to solve the problems for me. But I'm going to tell you part of the little story today that just came through today because this reminded me when I read this, this is what we do as great witnessing. There was a pastor and his son and family moved back to the area where he's pastoring. Son had is Adventist pastor. And his son and family had not particularly in the past 5 or 6, 7 years been going to the Adventist church. So when they came back, the son decided to find a job where he could keep the Sabbath. He had problems with a split family, so him and one of his children were going to Sabbath school and church. The other one, the wife and the other child would not go. So they kind of compromised that when he got home from church, then they would go and eat or eat at home, and then they would take the children to the zoo, to museums, and things like that on Sabbath afternoon. Sound pretty good? Now here's what the pastor said to him. This is not proper Sabbath observance. You should be going to nursing homes and visiting people on Sabbath afternoon, which is more. And by the way, remember that storm? I mean, you can't make these things up. Remember that storm that came by and did some damage to your house? Have you ever thought that maybe that was because of improper Sabbath keeping? And we get mad at the Jews? And we get mad at the Jews? Now tomorrow we're going to go into this one. This is a secondary story. Wait till you hear the other story. See? What in the world? Don't you think that a normal person would be down on their knees thanking God that his son cared for his family? That his son was trying to do, quote, the right thing with his family as much as he could? He was coming. But it's not the proper. This is all the Jews saw. Hey, this is great. This is great. Eternal. Well, external. You're not doing the list. So we can be hard on these people all we want to. Sometimes we're not that far removed. So if you want a wild conversation, be there tomorrow. They kept asking, is this the Jesus, son of Joseph? So Jesus answered them. Verse 43, stop grumbling and say things against me to one another. Now, one of the other things that we must understand that is happening there, who are the Jews concerned about conversing with?
Each other.
Each other. Arguing with each other and never giving insight to their own thinking, never giving insight to the Creator of the universe that was talking to them. All they were concerned with was arguing among each other. Do you know who this guy? Don't you know his mother? See, this is what happened. Were they looking for answers?
No.
No, closed-minded. Were they invited to go to heaven?
Yes.
But you see, they chose not to go. So Jesus says to them, let me make this plain to you. Verse 44, no one is able to come to me unless the Father who sent me attracts and draws him and gives him the desire to come to me, and then I will raise him from the dead at the last day.
It's important for us too to remember that the Holy Spirit is the one that convicts
people. Absolutely. Absolutely. See, this goes back just to what we're talking about. It's the Father who originally draws every person to Him. My favorite parable, prodigal son. When that boy was in the pig pen, who do you think was calling to him to go home? His father. He didn't do that on his own. God is always calling. The panoramic view, I believe, is his last call. Can't you see? But when somebody's in rebellion, there's nothing you can do. So this is what he says. The word draw, in the Greek, that's used several times. Number one is, remember John was a fisherman? So he uses the same thing. God draws. This was the same as casting a big net and hauling in as many fish as you can. Do you see what that connotation is? He draws, but it's a struggle. But he continues to draw and draw and draw. What causes the struggle?
The fish
trying to get out of the net. The fish trying to get out of that? And who trying to get out of the net when he's calling us?
We are.
But he doesn't give up. He doesn't give up. And so it's a constant struggle. Those fish are fighting for their lives, trying to get out, and that's exactly what the Greek word is saying, that he draws. It says, and the same word is used when Paul in Acts, Paul and Silas were drawn or drug to jail. Now you think that was against that they just said, come on, let's go? See, they were beaten and drug. That's the same word as draw that Jesus is using here. God will do everything in His power to draw us to Him, even when we're fighting. So remember the promise. Doesn't matter what we've done in the past or what we're doing now, God is still drawing. Why? Has a covenant. You're His child. And He'll never give up on you. Verse 45. It is written in the book of the prophets, and they shall be taught by God, have Him in person for their teacher. Everyone who has listened and learned from the Father comes to Me. This is a direct quote. We had time, we'd look it up from Isaiah 54:13. A messianic promise that the teacher would come and He would teach them of God. And here again, Jesus is drawing right to that particular verse, saying, you believe it, you look for it, you want to be taught, here I am. 54:13. Verse 46. Which does not imply that anyone that has seen the Father, not that anyone has ever seen Him, except He who was with the Father, who comes from God, He alone has seen the Father. I assure you, I most solemnly tell you, he who believes in Me, who adheres to, trusts in, relies on, and has faith in Me, has now possesses eternal life. I am the bread of life that gives life, the living bread. Your forefathers ate manna in the wilderness, and what happened to them? They died. Remember when He started this discourse? Talking about Moses, what were their thoughts? Well, go give us that bread. We want that bread. Now Jesus come full circle and says, your forefathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. But this is the bread that comes down from heaven so that anyone may eat of it and never die. Verse 51, I myself am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And also the bread that I shall give for the world is My flesh in body. Boy, they had no concept of that one. Then 52, then the Jews angrily contended with one another, saying, here they are, arguing among themselves, how is He able to give us His flesh to eat? They didn't have a clue. He started out. Jesus is a masterful teacher. Never lose sight of that. Read these passages with the context of teaching. He started out with manna. I am the bread of life. He walked them through it. He came right back and had a conclusion. I am the bread. You eat the manna, you die. And I am the bread of life, which give it. A very tactical presentation. And halfway through it, they said, well, how can He be from heaven? We know His father and mother. And when He's through, they said, how can we eat His flesh? What kind of idiot is this? Now, fair question. What can God do with these people?
Well, like nothing. He said,
nothing.
Keep casting the net.
Keep casting the net. That's why He tries for everything. Here, I'm the bread. Over here, I'm the good shepherd. Over here, I'm the light of the world. Over here, I'm the gatekeeper. If you're a farmer, I'm a vine. I'm the resurrection. If you're looking for miracles, I'm the resurrection and the life. Remember, His last great thing He did before He went to the cross was He resurrected Lazarus. You would think that would get anybody's attention.
It did.
Yeah, enough to make them want to kill Him. See? That's the beauty of your Father.
But the Pharisees would have made great adventists. They kept the Sabbath. They had health reform. They paid tithe. They sent their children to a church school. Right down the list. They
would right down the list. The story I told you about the pastor. Is that any... I just shared with you. Is that any different? Remember when Jesus healed the man? The pool of Bethesda, and he was running along happy. He could walk after 38 years. And what did the pastor of that day say? Yeah. Do you get it? I don't think that we know the damage we do to people. What was the difference? Wind comes, messes up your house because you're not properly keeping the Sabbath. And I know you just got healed, but why are you carrying your bed? People are no different. There's only one truth that matters. I don't know how many times Jesus can say it. You want to get to heaven? Come to me. I'm your shepherd. I'm your gatekeeper. I'm your light. I'm your bread. I'm your water. I'm the vine. I'm your resurrection. I'm your life. How many times does He keep saying it? In the Old Testament, just let me be your God and you be my people. And then we come along and add all the stuff on it. We add so many things that some of us say, I'm not even worthy. And all He's doing is casting that net of loving kindness. And He just keeps pulling and keeps pulling, keeps pulling. Why do we make salvation so complicated?
You know, I was contemplating on this verse that Jesus says, nobody comes to the Father except by me. Now, for a few years ago, we had a real big theological discussion about that the Jews couldn't be saved because they didn't accept Jesus.
Yeah.
But I started thinking, what does He really mean by nobody comes to the Father except by me? I started thinking, well, you could go to all the biggest libraries in the country, read all the books on God you wanted to, but if you did not read about God through the life of Jesus, you still have no idea who God is. So that way alone is a way that you have to go through Jesus to understand who God is.
Yeah, very good point. In summarizing, how did Jesus reveal the Father?
The way He lived, the way He treated people.
Woman at the well. The children. Drove the Pharisees and all the traitors out of the temple. Do you know what the next verse has Him doing? Do you remember? Anybody remember?
Little children.
Little children. Now how can He drive out the... Little children wasn't scared of Him one bit. See, that's how you come to the Father. You look at Jesus, the way He treated people, what He did, and as you come closer to Him, that is what you become. So the great passage, I am the bread of life. Our Father has everything for us if we'll just cleave to Him, trust Him, and have that relationship. Let Him be our God, and we be His son and daughter. It's just that simple. Father in heaven, again, we're so thankful for John. He certainly knew what was important because throughout his book, he certainly demonstrates the love of God through his Son. May we hold on to that every day as we renew our relationship with You every day. Thank You for Your love. Thank You for casting out Your net and not getting weary, and continue to pull, because You continually do draw us with loving kindness. That's who You are. Thank You. Amen.